This is Talk Radio 680 WCBM. It's time now for Money, Riches, and Wealth. Here's your host, Drew Tignanelli.
This is Drew Tignanelli here, Money, Riches, and Wealth, and Thomas Bonvasuto. Bonbon, how are you, sir?
I'm doing great, Drew. Welcome back.
That's right. I wasn't here last week, was I?
No, you weren't.
I was in San Francisco,
yeah,
you know?
The left coast.
Yeah.
As Sean and Frank like to say.
Actually, when you guys, I was waiting in an airport in San Francisco, right, when you guys were on the air.
Yep, getting ready to head over on the red eye.
Yeah. Anyway, we're on an open show tonight,
yes,
Thomas.
Yes, sir.
I hear you did a great show last week on college planning.
Yeah, we had a lot of fun with that. That's an important topic.
It is an important topic. Anybody who has children headed to college, it can easily destroy one's personal financial planning if done improperly. But college, I like to say, can be very affordable or will absolutely bankrupt you.
Right, right.
And you say, how could it be both? And it is both, because I like to say that if the parent determines the budget that they're going to spend on college, college can be very affordable.
Yep.
But if you turn around and just say to little Johnny or little Susie, go wherever you want and I'll figure out how to pay for it,
yep,
you know, because I don't want to hold you back in life or whatever, that will cost you a fortune.
Yes, it can.
I almost every time I've seen a parent do that, the child has had opportunity to go to schools that are incredibly reasonably priced, and they inevitably choose the most expensive college that they're looking at.
Yep.
I don't know why that's true, but it seems to be true.
Well, it's prestige, it's pride, there's all sorts of ego, all sorts of things that
and
play
friends
into that.
Go in there or something,
yep,
like that,
sure,
and everybody's gaga over, you know, oh, geez, Mark's going to. And then, you know, you say, well, you know, I ought to go to somewhere like that,
right,
too, you know.
Right.
And so the parent ends up paying a boatload. And does the child really get a better education? I'm not a big fan of that when it comes to undergraduate school.
That's right.
Graduate school,
does,
totally different story, in my opinion.
Yeah,
yes,
sure.
Anyway, we're on an open show tonight. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680. See, I remember the number. It's been 2 weeks, Tom.
Yeah,
that's pretty good. It's right here in front of me, too. And now I don't have my glasses on. I couldn't see it. So there's your 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and ask a question, 410-922-6680 is the way to call in and ask a question during our open show. And if you call in, you direct the conversation. But you know what, Tom, I wanted to talk about is risk management.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Risk management is a concept that most individuals don't understand. They think they do risk management when they call up their auto insurance company and ask them for an auto policy, or they call up their long-term care insurance agent and ask for a long-term care insurance policy, or they feel they need life insurance, they call up a life insurance agent and ask them for life insurance. And really, all people get when they do that is they get sold what the agent wants to give them.
Right.
Risk management is where you take a risk, you analyze the risk, you figure out how much this risk could potentially cost you, and then you figure out what's the most effective way to offset that risk,
right,
along with practical techniques that you can use that's not includes buying insurance. Buying insurance should be the final concept,
mm-hmm,
and then
mm-hmm,
you decide between, okay, now that I'm down to my final analysis of my risk, now I decide whether I want to self-insure it and or ignore it, or
right,
whether I want to insure it. And there's nothing wrong with ignoring it as long as you understand why you're ignoring it and
right,
so forth.
Right.
But the point of the matter is that most people don't do risk management. And,
yep,
and a lot of people think that insurance is about, I put out so much money and I want so much money back in return. So if I put out $50,000 over
right,
30 years,
mm-hmm,
I want $50,000 back some reason, some
right,
way, shape, or form. That's not the way insurance works. You know, nobody
right,
puts out, you know, umpteen, you know, thousands of dollars for medical insurance and is hoping to get back umpteen thousands of dollars of medical bills paid for them.
Yep.
You know,
yep,
I'd prefer not to have a nickel in medical bills paid. I
yeah,
don't put out auto insurance either to hope that someday I have an accident and,
right,
you know, and they're going to put out
hundreds
of thousands of dollars for
right,
the few thousand I put out for it.
Yep.
I'd prefer not to have that.
Yep.
My concept of insurance is it's an expensive life
right,
to manage risk that doesn't devastate my finances.
Right.
And when we think about it like we do as fee-only advisors, we don't have a horse in the race.
Right.
We could care less if a client buys auto insurance or doesn't buy, or buy long-term care insurance, doesn't buy long-term care insurance, buys this type of long-term care or that type of life insurance or that life insurance.
Right.
It doesn't matter to us. What matters is that we educate our people and we make sure they understand what risk they have and are they properly handling that risk one way or the other. And they understand if they're going to ignore it or self-insure it, they understand what they're doing. That's the concept of risk management.
Yeah, exactly. And it's, you know, it's typically you pay a little for a lot of potential coverage, but you hope never to use it. I mean, I even had it with my daughter. You know, she said, I'm not sure about this renter's insurance. I don't think I'm going to keep it. I didn't use it this last year.
Right.
I said, that was a good thing.
I'm going to Eddie in Pikesville. Eddie, how can we help you?
Yeah, good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Recently, there's been a push on radio. It started out, you know, invest in us. It's this real estate. We take your money. We buy properties. They take examples like Walgreens is going to rent from us and so forth and so on. Most recently, they've launched the same campaign for the company that says invest in us.
Right.
What can you tell me about that company? What's it all about? And
I don't know the specific one you're talking about. But in my experience with the types of things you're talking about, 99% of the time, it's an absolute waste of money.
I gathered that. Well, that's why I call your show, because you made things just so simple.
Well, that's simple enough as it can be. You know, like these private real estate deals, you know, and they make them out to be like these are the wonderful things that they are. I've seen a lot of them. You know, clients come to me, they have them, and I rarely see those things make money over time. The illiquidity of them, normally if you want to get out of them, they normally have to be sold at 25 to 50% less than what they could even be perceived to be worth. You know, I just don't, you know, anytime you hear these kinds of things, you're usually best to just ignore them.
Well, I'm recognizing that somebody is selling something. And so, they're, you know, what are they trying to sell? I mean, real estate as an investment can be a good investment, whether it be, you know, real estate investment trusts and the like and some other properties and so forth. But when somebody's trying to sell you this stuff, and if it sounds too good to be true, it probably is too, you know, it's not that
good. But if we could get the specifics on it, we're more than willing to look at it because,
right.
You know, we're fee-only advisors.
Sure.
We could care less. If it's a great deal,
mm-hmm.
we want to see it and
yep.
we want to bring it to our clients. So
yeah.
If anybody who's actually out there promoting this kind of stuff, if you really think it's wonderful, send it to our office.
Yep.
We'd be more than happy to look at it. We'll be the first one to come on the air and say, I apologize for
yeah.
saying bad things
sure.
about you.
Yeah, there are some good investments in real estate, but
sure.
usually not the ones you hear on the radio.
All right.
Now that you say right, that's what they're selling. But my curiosity was why they launched it first to invest your money to get a return in monthly rents, to now running a campaign that says we're an IPO, you can get in on it early.
Well, I would make sure that they've done all the proper legal requirements in order to promote a stock. It's not that easy to just say invest in us as
right.
an IPO.
Yeah.
There are legal requirements that have got to go on. Matter of fact,
sure.
there was a situation on this radio station
mm-hmm.
about 30 years ago or 20 years ago, got a lot of people in trouble for just that situation. I got to run, Eddie. I got to take traffic, and then we're going to be right back with Rob in White Marsh. Take it away, traffic.
Do you need help organizing your financial life? You thought about what retirement looks like when you go beyond just the numbers? The financial physical is the first step in working together to organize your personal finances and your goals. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent, fee-only firm. Call today to schedule your financial physical and experience the difference. Learn at DrewTig.com. That's DrewTig.com or 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-SAVE.
All right, we're back, and we're going to go right to Rob because he's up. And anybody else who wants to call in, 410-922-6680. Rob, how can we help you?
Got a question for you. I was recently out with a friend of mine that moved his portfolio to a new money manager. And part of his deal was, why he thought he needed to make this move. The guy's telling him that, I'm going to rebalance your portfolio every year.
Rebalance.
And, yeah, and so I asked my friend, well, what does that mean? And he's like, well, the things that I made money from, he's going to figure it out and get rid of them and then put me in new things. But I'm kind of old school in the sense that some things you want to hold for decades, and I don't really know if it makes good business sense if
okay.
you have something of quality to switch it out.
Let me explain what he's saying, and there are many theories to rebalancing a portfolio. Okay, so that's the term he's using, rebalancing. And so let's say that somebody comes in and buys 10 different mutual funds or index funds, I should say. It's usually done with index funds. And so let's say they buy U.S. large cap stocks, U.S. small cap stocks, U.S. mid cap stocks. They buy international stocks, emerging market stocks, U.S. bond funds indexes, U.S. international indexes. And they go with an allocation of 20%, 10%, 10%, 5%, 15%, 20%, 20%, or whatever the allocation they're going with all these indexes. And then the theory is that as the markets go up, the balance, the allocation in these different indexes are going to get out of whack. Let's say the stock market goes up 50%, the bond market goes down 5%. So the theory is that you bring the stock allocation down some, and you bring the bond allocation up some, because maybe this next year the bonds are going to be the ones that are going to catch up with the stocks and so forth. Now, what I'm saying is very simplistic, Rob, because there's many different theories. Some people rebalance, and Tom actually should be addressing this better than I should, because he's the man, he's the CFA, he's the portfolio allocator, he understands all this stuff, you know, and some people do it quarterly, some people do it yearly, so
yep.
Tom, give them...
Well, yeah, and Rob, there's been a lot of theories about how often a rebalance, and actually annually is one of the ones that, you know, the statistics will say is good, but I think your point's a different one as well. Is that, you know, say you bought, you know, Under Armour and you bought some individual stocks and you want to ride that out. Do you hold that and how long do you hold it? The challenge is you get these advisors out there that they have these little shticks, these little gimmicks that they throw out there for folks that, in order to lure people in. And the reality, they simplify it too much. It's a much more complex thing than just rebalancing every year, and that's going to solve all your problems. That is a piece of the puzzle, but it's really, you know, one of the reasons you rebalance is to get somebody back into an allocation that is in line with their overall risk and reward profile and what you're trying to accomplish. So if somebody started out and they were kind of a 50-50 stocks and bonds investor, and all of a sudden they're 75% in stocks and 25% in bonds, their portfolio is probably not positioned for the amount of risk that they're able and willing to take, and so you would rebalance them back to that 50-50 mix. That's the purpose, partly to rebalance. Also, as Drew was pointing out, if they've gone up to, you know, stocks are at 75% and bonds went to 25, you know, you're likely to have a pullback in stocks. So this helps you by, you know, selling high and buying low.
Possibly, yes.
Yeah, potentially.
So you see where that's coming from, Rob? It's not an absolute that this is the greatest thing since sliced bread, but it's a good theory. It has some logic behind it. But you better understand, and like Tom says, don't let an individual money manager tell you they've got the secret of something like a rebalancing and so forth.
Right. I mean, we look at some of our portfolios and to rebalance them periodically, but we have other things we have to take into account. We might take in taxes in certain portfolios and tax.
Because every time
selling.
You rebalance, you're going to be paying taxes
yeah,
on that.
Typically, you will, because you're selling the things that went up and you're buying the things that went down.
All right, Rob.
Got time for another one?
Go ahead, quickly.
Sure.
I understand in lieu of buying the mutual funds now, majority of the people, money managers, are doing the exchange-traded funds because there's supposed to be more benefits in spite of the mutual funds as far as sale, pricing, and market. And I'll hang up and listen to your answer.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, in regards to exchange-traded funds or ETFs versus mutual funds, there are pros and cons to both. You know, with an exchange-traded fund...
But I think he's referring more to just indexes.
Yeah, so exchange-traded funds are typically based on an index out there, and it's out there. But, you know, they trade at a spread, you know, so they don't trade exactly at the value they're at. They trade at a price that it could be higher or lower than what it's worth at a given point in time. You may or may not have to pay a commission on that to trade in exchange-traded funds. So whereas a mutual fund is the price, and that's what you're going to get. So there are certain benefits. Exchange-traded funds have
some
tax benefits that are out
there. But I think also,
Tom,
he's talking about passive versus active. I think that's really where he's coming
to. Well, that's also been the trend. A lot of people have moved to passive management, index management, like an ETF. But even the ETFs, I mean, every day somebody's coming out with some new flavor of an ETF, which is effectively an active strategy. But they're much more transparent. You know what the holdings are every day. So there's a lot you can do with ETFs and mutual funds, and we find that a blend of them can add value depending on what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah, I agree that the blend is a good way to go, because I don't think there's any one theory that's ever going to be the only theory to go with. Matter of fact, as everybody falls into this passive thing, it's ultimately going to fail, believe it or not.
There are issues.
Anyway, we're going to Frank in Baltimore on Medicare Part C.
Hi, Drew. I'd like to get your opinion and Tom's opinion.
You only have 2 weeks left to go, Frank.
Right.
October 5th is coming quickly.
You're right. Your opinion of Medicare C, Medicare Advantage, as opposed to Medicare B traditional. Now, I'm sure most of your listeners are aware that in order to get into Medicare C, you have to enroll in Medicare B, elect Medicare C, and then pay any additional premiums either for the specific plan itself or for combined Medicare D drug coverage. But in terms of the concept, because with Medicare C, it looks like you can avoid the need for Medicare supplemental. What do you think?
Medicare C, you can avoid supplemental?
Yeah, because like with Medicare...
Oh, yeah, it is.
It's
is.
The Medicare Advantage
Medicare Advantage plan is the supplemental. Mm-hmm. So... Mm-hmm. In other words, you're working with United Healthcare in an Advantage plan, and you're working with Medicare all at the same time inside the Medicare Advantage plan.
Right, because I know they have different kinds. Like, there's apparently one of the most popular now is the Medicare C cost plan, and
yeah.
I think that gives you the option of, because the Medicare C is somewhat like an HMO.
That's correct. That's your point. You know, you were just ready. You just hit on the topic I was going to bring up, and that is that Medicare C is very similar to going into an HMO. You've got a group of doctors you got to count on and so forth. You got to go to. You probably have a gatekeeper and so forth.
Right.
But all your Medicare A, your Medicare B, your Medicare D, and your Medigap is all rolled into your Medicare Part C. And if you're looking to save money and you don't, and you like the doctors in the Advantage plan, Advantage has a lot of advantages.
Right.
You know? So I'm not a big fan of them. I don't encourage my clients to go into them a lot, but when a client wants to and is happy with the doctors in them, I do, I say, you know, my own parents were in a Medicare Advantage plan, and they loved it. They loved the doctors they had, and they were quite happy with it.
Why do you tend to prefer traditional Medicare? Because it's my understanding that with a Medicare C cost plan, at any time you can go to any doctor you want under the terms of traditional Medicare, the 80%. Or go to your Medicare C providers at pretty much 100%.
Well, you just said it at 80%, you know, and so forth. So with Medigap Plan F that I typically go with, we have a plan that pretty much covers everything and anything that our client could possibly ever want. And so, you know, don't get me wrong. There's a lot of ways to work with this Medicare concept, but Medicare Plan F is relatively inexpensive for the basically zero amount of expenses, I mean, amount of medical bills you could have, there's basically no out-of-pocket cost afterward, and it's not that expensive for what you're putting out. So I think it's about $350 a month for the typical person with a Medigap Plan B and the Medigap policy. Noah's swinging at me. Do you want to hold on or call back? I got to go to my traffic break, okay?
I'll hold on.
All right, you hold on. All right, we're back. What's that, Noah? Just electric music? All right, that's okay. I have to apologize to Frank anyway. Frank, I'm sorry, I should put on my glasses so I see what I'm hitting, you know? I hit the drop instead of the hold button.
Right. Drew, we were talking about Medicare options, and you mentioned that for your clients, you tend to prefer Medicare F.
Yes, Medicare Plan F or G. The only difference between F and G is G does not cover the $165 deductible. The F does. That's the only difference. Otherwise, F covers everything. You have Plan F with Medicare A, B, and C. You have unlikelihood you're going to have any bills for the rest of your life. And here's the thing that I find about it. My clients pay about $100 a month for Medicare Part B. They pay about $50 a month for Medicare Part C. And they pay about $200 a month for the Medigap coverage. So you're talking about $350 a month for pretty much unlimited medical. And, you know, I just don't see any reason to even worry about Medicare Advantage. But you got a client on a tight budget? Medicare Advantage can really give you some nice advantage. That's why they call it that. Because, yeah, they're still going to have to pay their Medicare Part B premium, but if I'm not mistaken, most Advantage plans don't require you to pay too much, if anything, extra for Medicare Part C, and there's no cost normally for the Advantage plan.
Yeah. Is there a Medicare Part E?
Not that I know of, but there could be.
I thought they eliminated that one over.
I didn't know that. I don't think they ever had one, did they?
It's not the whole alphabet, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But F and G are the popular ones that we look at.
Right. And so, but there are a lot of Medicare Advantage plans. And actually, I was telling Tom at the break, I thought President Obama wanted to do everything he could to pretty much eliminate Medicare Advantage. But it's actually grown under him. I've seen even articles on this whole topic that it's actually become more popular under him, despite the fact that he wanted to actually eliminate it, and that was part of what he was going to try to do in the ACA, but it didn't actually happen. I got to run, Frank. Sorry, I got another call here I got to take. All right, buddy?
All right.
Thanks, Frank.
A couple weeks, we'll get the annuity guy on. Dee Dee, how can we help you?
Thank you, sir. Good evening. I'm calling in regards to the Wells Fargo, the information that's been out for the last couple of weeks about what's going on. What are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I think that anytime a bank gives incentives or puts pressure on people to do certain types of things, people will come up with creative ways to do those types of things.
Oh, yeah.
And so they were putting a lot of pressure on them to get new accounts opened and so forth. And some people figured out a way around the system, and they were fraudulently setting up accounts. There's all kinds of stupid things that happen. And
Yeah, I mean, your point, Drew, is that any institution, not just the banks, we always talk about economic bias in our business and understanding how people get paid and what's incenting them. And, you know, I'd worked at banks for 26 years, and, you know, in the branch structures, a lot of them had grids, and they had to sell a certain amount of checking accounts and savings accounts and investment accounts and safe deposit boxes to kind of complete a grid, because the bank knew that cross-selling would help. And it's just kind of like when you go to McDonald's, they say, can we go on some fries with that? And it's because they know once they've got you there, the more they can get you to do with them, the more likely you're going to stay. They want to deepen that relationship and intertwine that with you. And so if people are being compensated based on that, and with this grid structure, if you didn't do all the things in the grid, didn't matter if you sold a gazillion of one thing, if you didn't fill out your whole grid, you didn't get compensated, you know, so you didn't get the bonuses and the like. So whenever you have those incentives, it's misleads people. Wells Fargo is not a bad bank. They just had, you know, some bad practices that went on, and they'll clean it up.
What do you think, Dee Dee?
Well, I was wondering, I'm calling for an elderly neighbor, and she's worried about the safety of the bank.
No, Wells Fargo is probably the safest bank in the world.
Really?
Seriously.
Let me
tell you something unique about Wells Fargo. If I understand correctly, Wells Fargo controls something like 20% of all the mortgages in the United States of America. Isn't that right?
Definitely a big mortgage company.
Heard it was considerable.
It is. It's not only do they have that, and despite the mortgage collapse of the 2008, Wells Fargo handled that better despite the fact that they had such huge percentages of all the mortgages because their practices for underwriting have been very good.
Yep.
And so Wells Fargo's probably one of the safest. I don't like them. I would never bank with them.
Right.
They're probably one of the safest banks in the country.
Well, I've heard that about another bank. A lot of people don't care for one of the other major banks in our state, M&T. But other than that, information.
Yeah.
Given out has been going on since 2001.
Yeah, well, that kind of stuff happens, you know. But I think what they did in 2006 and 2007, where they were pushing these mortgages through, like what Bank of America did.
Right.
Now that, in my opinion, especially when they bought Countrywide mortgage.
Sure.
I got to run, Dee Dee. Yep. I appreciate your call.
Thanks.
We're going to Tom in Cadenceville. Tom, how can we help you?
Well, it's sort of off subject, but I listen to you guys all the time. I got like the 7th phone call from IRS that they're checking.
Tom, that is an absolute scam. The IRS puts out notices quite often saying the IRS never, ever calls individuals the way these guys are doing. It's an absolute scam, and I encourage every listener, you get a call from them or you get a voicemail or anything like that saying, this is the IRS, we're going to sue you, we're ready to prosecute, we're going to pound your, you're going to attach your accounts, et cetera. You just ignore them, hang up immediately, don't call them back, don't even try to play games with them, et cetera. These are some really, really evil, wicked people, and I pray that God destroys every single one of them that thinks that this is a good thing to do and tries to manipulate people like this, because there have been people that have been hurt very bad by these types of people and scared to death by them.
Yep.
And I just pray that God would just destroy anybody who tries to use this method to hurt people.
Well, I thank you so much, because They don't let you get a chance to talk. They keep talking on.
You just ignore them.
Just hang up.
As a matter of fact, you know, I've gone to the practice now that we do not answer our phone unless we absolutely know who it is. We let everything go to voicemail, and, you know, we get about 4 or 5 a day, I think it is, and we just delete them. But,
I have an old-fashioned answering machine, and I monitor them, and occasionally I pick up.
And this is just one of many evil scams that these types of people do.
Yep.
And but they call everybody. Yep. Everybody is getting these calls from these characters.
No matter what you think about the government, they're not going to threaten you.
No.
They're not going to call you.
They don't do this. They don't do it at all, my friend, okay?
I really appreciate that.
Not a problem. You just ignore them, my friend.
Bye-bye.
Enjoy. And we're going to traffic. Look right on time there, Noah.
Personal finance has become a major area of stress due to the increasing dangers and complexities of the global economy. Personal financial management is a comprehensive approach to combating these issues, and the financial physical is the first step. This is Drew Tignanelli, host of Money, Riches, and Wealth, and president of the Financial Consulate, an independent fee-only firm. The financial physical begins with an objective analysis of your personal finances and ends with a plan to help achieve your goals. Experience the difference of the financial physical and learn how personal financial management can revolutionize your financial well-being. To learn more about the financial physical and the other services we offer, call us at 410-823-SAVE. That's 410-823-7283. Or the easy way to remember that, 410-823-SAFE, or visit us online at drewtig.com. That's drewtig.com.
Anyway, we're on an open show. Open. We have no callers online. 410-922-6680. If you want to call in and get your opportunity to ask a question so that the conversation moves in the direction that you want to hear it go in. But let's just reiterate, Tom called in about the IRS people calling.
Right.
IRS never, never calls on the phone and tells people the things that these guys are saying on the phone.
Yep.
And you always get a letter in the mail, an official letter in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
And even then, you'll get an official letter in the mail. That's really the way, the only way they're going to communicate with you is an official letter in the mail.
Right.
And, they will not call. They'll send an agent to your house. And even if you did get an agent come to your house, if somebody came to your house and said, or do your business and said they're with an IRS, with the IRS, you want to ask for their badge number and you want to verify that they are who they say they are.
Right.
And you have your right to be represented by an attorney or have a CPA present with you. If the IRS did show up, you know, anyway, but that's not even common.
Right.
They normally will do everything through the mail.
Yep.
They don't use email to, you know, to send you harassing things or warn you. So don't answer emails from the IRS.
Right.
And they definitely do not phone call like these scam artists are doing.
Right.
And may they all be cursed for what they do.
Yeah, and you know, I mean, there are people that will call, you know, the bank. Banks, the credit card companies, they will call. You know, I mean,
but you have the right to tell them,
and
you
can tell them other ways to communicate with you.
Yeah,
as
you can say if you want to communicate with me, strictly do it through the mail.
Yeah.
And if they don't, record every single time they keep calling you, and then go to a lawyer.
Right. Well, and those are the do not call list. But I'm saying even if
if
your own,
if a credit card company calls you and harasses you because you owe them money,
right.
And you tell them I want you to only communicate with me through the mail, and they keep calling, make a log of every single call they make, and then go to a lawyer after about four or five of them.
Yeah. But my son even had a call the other day. He was making some purchases, and he got a call.
Oh yeah, that's a different story.
And they left him a message, and I said, go look on the back your card, call the number there back, you know, just to kind of verify.
So I do that.
An independent source.
So what you're saying, Tom, is, you know, okay, you get a voicemail and it's from your credit card. Mine's Capital One. So it says, this is Capital One. We're calling to try to verify this fraud alert. You know, we have a, you know, suspicious charges. We're not sure if it's really you.
Yep.
We just want to verify. Could you call us back?
Right.
You flip your card over. You don't call back the number they give you. You get, you flip your card over. You look at the phone number on your card and you call that number.
Right.
If it's the same number, great. If it's not, I would only call the one on my card.
Yeah.
I agree. That's a great point you're making.
Yeah, so people need to be careful. Now, I also tell you, my wife just texted me and said that was not the turtles. It was the birds.
She heard Noah. She's trying to...
All right. Well, she was a little concerned. Actually, I heard a sermon this weekend about that song, so that's a whole other topic.
She's much more a music person than I am, obviously. You know, it could have been the Ants. Was there a band called the Ants? I think there was, actually, wasn't there?
I think they're running out of names. They name them everything nowadays.
Right. Anyway, we're on an open show, but we only have about 4 or 5 minutes left. But anyway, let me just go back to the original thing we talked about at the very beginning of the show, Tom, and that's risk management.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
And it really frustrates the living heck out of me because most people have never done true risk management.
Right.
How often do we have clients come in to do financial physicals with us and we have to really educate them as to the risk that they're running in their life insurance and their auto insurance and their homeowners insurance?
Right.
You would think that, you know, most people are pretty well protected because they've all talked to insurance agents. They've all, you know, but it's...
They don't understand the incentives that are driving the recommendations.
Yeah.
Right.
No, absolutely. We had a client come in. They were making good money.
Mm-hmm.
They had an auto insurance company. And I was shocked at how bad the policy was.
Mm-hmm.
If these people, at the kind of income they were making and the assets they had accumulated, had an accident, they were really...
Right.
in serious trouble.
Yeah.
And, you know, for about $200 a year, we fix the policy.
Right.
And they can sleep at night now knowing that they were sleeping at night because they had no idea what risk they were taking.
Know.
They thought they had it all covered.
Yep.
We've seen too many times where people come in and, you know, they're upset about their long-term care insurance because the premiums are going up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, there's a direct correlation between the premiums going up and the risk that you're possibly going to run into.
Right.
And insurance, people think that insurance companies raise their premium just because they want to make oodles and boodles of money.
Right.
You know, these companies are heavily regulated by the insurance commissioners of each state. It's not that easy to make oodles and boodles of money. They do make a profit,
sure,
but they don't make oodles and boodles of money.
Right.
They're raising the premium because there's a significant risk they underestimated.
Sure. And there's rules, like you said, there's rules about it, and you just have to understand, you know, that happens. And by having an independent person look at your situation, then you can assess what you need, how much you need, and where you might want to go and get that.
Yeah.
You know, because it's the mailers you get. You talk about calls. You get mailers. I get AAA. I get all these mailers. And sometimes they're reasonable, but a lot of times it's just trying to sell me something quick.
So, you know, here's the thing that really is frustrating is insurance companies are masters of marketing. They're masters of marketing. So they hear that people don't like the fact that their long-term care insurance premiums are going up, and they hear people saying, well, I put all this money on them, they may not get anything out of this. So they come up with this great idea. Well, we're going to give you your premiums back at a certain period of time. Or if you die, your family's going to get your money back with this life insurance long-term care.
Yep.
And it's all absolute marketing garbage.
Right.
And there are unique situations where it works, where it works, like you get somebody who can't get long-term care insurance because of their medical condition, and they'd rather have something like this than nothing. I can see how it could work, possibly. But for the most part, it's absolute marketing garbage. It's just like these annuities they're coming out with where you get your bonus and you get your guaranteed 7% rate of return and you get all this. And they're marketing this stuff, making people believe that they're getting something they're not.
Right.
And the public is clamoring for it because they just don't fully comprehend what garbage they're feeding them.
And 2 weeks from now, we hope to cover that. October the 5th.
On Wade the annuity
Fowl,
topic.
Right? That's 2 weeks from now.
Yeah,
that's
we'll see what he says, and it'll be an interesting discussion nonetheless.
That's right.
Anyway, what's up next week?
Romer McPhee talking about a legendary investor, Robert Wilson, that nobody's ever heard of.
I knew him.
Yeah,
anyway,
he's pretty good.
This is Drew Tignanelli saying God bless.